why me and you will be friends. Because underneath the yards of nonsense that puts you down one end of the ladder and me up at the other end, we both still just straight up despise ourselves. It was like she had pushed past some kind of barrier, seeing past the alpha persona he wore to the wounded, devastated boy she had found on the top floor of the library in their first year. Whatever had made him cry that day still affected him. It was a soul-deep wound, and it made sense to her, in a strange kind of way. She was wounded, too. "Illy," she said, swallowing against the emotion butting up against her chest. It was the only nickname anyone had ever given her. "My mama, it's..." She closed her eyes for a moment, allowing that crack in her chest to widen, to suck in his pain so she wouldn't have to deal with her own. "You can call me Illy." Chapter 4, The Underdog Cliché. "It's getting late." Isabel waded through the water to the pool's edge, stepping out and hastily wrapping herself in a towel. "Sure," Theodore replied, sounding like he knew. He knew she was freaking out over giving him her nickname and was embarrassed about freaking out over something so small to top it off. His smile and his voice were light and soothing, but his eyes were heavy as they met hers. "We can continue the lesson another time, if you're still up for it." She nodded, hoping he could still hear her, even though she lowered her voice enough that it wouldn't carry to any of the cameras now that she was moving toward the door leading back to the fitness center. "That would be nice. Night, Kane."
"Theo,"
he corrected her, a large hand skimming over the surface of the cold water.
"Only the producers call me Kane."
Isabel snorted. "Everyone calls you Kane."
"Except anyone who matters. Good night, Illy."
She nodded slightly and pushed through the door, catching sight of the clock on the wall. 2 a.m. She had to be up in 3 hours for dance practice. After a hasty shower, she got dressed again and hightailed it back to the dorm, tucking her head down at the sight of Ironside doused in darkness and solitude, even though it was something she might have paused to admire at another time. She unlocked the front door of Dorm O and skipped up the stairs 2 at a time, skidding to a stop in her open doorway. The door was shoved wide, the light from the hallway spilling in to illuminate the mess within, and a single form crouched in the middle of it. "Eve?" Isabel asked, swallowing down the tremble in her voice. "What happened?" Her room was wrecked. The record covers she had salvaged from the pile of items left outside the music department for trash pickup were in tatters. The records they had housed snapped into halves. Her makeshift curtains were torn apart at the very messy seams she had laboriously stitched by hand. She had salvaged trash, trying to make something beautiful from the discarded items, but someone had taken it upon themselves to reverse her efforts, relegating it all to a brand new trash pile in the middle of her room. Her personal belongings had been pulled from the shelves and were in broken fragments or tattered pieces. Her clothes had been cut up, her shower bag emptied, the bottles of toiletries squeezed out onto her makeshift bed.
"I'm sorry, Isabel."
Eve had tears in her blue eyes, making them look like big oceans of sorrow.
"I tried to stop them, but it was me against a whole group of fourth years."
"Fourth years," Isabel echoed, trying to piece together what she had done to deserve this particular cruelty. It was methodical, purposeful, as mean and impactful as they could have made it. "Stay in your lane," was scrawled over the wall in lipstick, jerky and messy, like whoever had written it had been particularly upset.
Someone told them about where you were tonight.
Eve pulled to her feet, approaching carefully, her hands wringing together.
I saw Kane waiting for you outside the bathrooms, so I guess other people saw as well.
The girl at the shop. Isabel deflated, glancing down at the band-aids on her arm.
How did they get a key to my room?
They didn't.
Eve pointed to the door.
They busted the lock.
Then I can't sleep here tonight. Thanks for waiting for me. I'll just go and tell one of the dorm supervisors and see if there's anywhere else I can sleep.
I already reported it.
Eve stared at her shoes. She was wearing sneakers with her pajamas, probably because of the mess of broken things on the floor.
And, well, I asked for an extra mattress in my room. It's all set up if you... I mean, no pressure.
Please. Isabel cut her off, realizing just how nervous and unsure the other girl was.
If you're sure.
Definitely.
Eve seemed to gain a few inches of height, her smile snapping across her face like it had been an effort to hold back. She was a naturally bubbly person and seemed to struggle when she had to see others in pain.
Should we try to pick through this and see what we can save?
She looked around at the mess. Isabel's stomach sank, thinking about the photos she had brought from home, her notebooks, her favorite piano music, even things she would have considered replaceable, like her favorite t-shirt and ripped jeans. She could see a cut-up section of the shirt on the floor, the pretty flower design on the front, like album art, sliced into triangular pieces.
I'll do it tomorrow, she eventually said, turning her back on the chaos. Come on, then.
Eve slipped an arm around her shoulders, leading her out of the room.
Those bitches never would have dared if you had cameras inside your room like the rest of us.
Lucky me, Isabel muttered. Eve steered her down the hall and into her own room. The notice board out the front was filled with cute messages because everyone loved Eve. It was impossible not to. There was a mattress on the floor, already made up with sheets, pillows, and blankets. Isabel immediately went and sat on it, dropping her bag down beside her. She fiddled with the edge of the top blanket, her eyes trained down like she hadn't yet been given permission to see the rest of the room.
Do you need to change or shower?
Eve prodded gently.
I can come into the bathroom with you.
You don't need to feel sorry for me, was all Isabel said, her eyes finally lifting.
I'll be fine. I used to think that,
Eve answered immediately, like she had preempted the statement.
I used to watch you sometimes, in our first year, always alone, like you didn't really want to mix with anyone. You never try to talk to other kids in class, and you only ever come out in the evenings when the other girls drag you. Sometimes you seem sick, too, and I thought maybe that's why you don't want to be close to anybody. But then one night, I came home from tennis practice really late, and you were passed out in the common room, all pale and sweaty. I sat with you for a while, and you eventually just woke up and shuffled off to bed like nothing had happened. You were so out of it, you didn't even see me. Now I think I've been stupid all this time. You're not alone because you want to be. Isabel couldn't help it. She glanced up toward one of the cameras and then forced herself to look down again. Don't ever let them see you cry.
No, she whispered. I don't want to be alone.
Then it's settled.
Eve looked happy. She even clapped her hands together and bounced against the edge of her bed.
You're staying with me until we can get your room sorted. And,
she held up a finger to cut off Isabel's protest,
we'll eat our meals together in the dining hall from now on, too. The food here is too good to eat by yourself every day.
You really don't have to.
I'm not finished.
Eve frowned at her.
You're a dancer, right?
She waited for Isabel's wary nod.
I'm a singer, she exclaimed. We could do some work together, maybe even submit a collab.
Isabel chuckled despite herself. You don't want to submit a collab with me. Getting a Sigma to dance to one of your songs is the easiest way to send it straight into obscurity.
Oh, pfft! Eve flapped her hand. That just makes it more of a challenge. And I'm a firm believer in taking the hard way. How else will I get noticed in this place? In case you haven't realized, I'm a nice girl Omega. I'm not dramatic, sexy, scandalous, or insanely powerful. I have nothing else to offer but my skill.
Then I guess we aren't so different, Isabel said, suddenly thinking about Theodore. How they were the same, too. But then she was thinking about how his angular jaw had sparkled with drops of water while his eyes darkened with intensity. Eve was a much safer friend choice. Eve thrust down her hand, offering it to Isabel.
Shake on it. No takebacks.
No takebacks? Isabel smirked, shaking her head as she slipped her pale hand into Eve's tanned one.
What? Eve pouted. I'm wholesome. It's adorable. I'm the perfect best friend candidate.
I've never had a best friend before.
Oh, thank God.
Eve tightened her grip like a vice.
Then you won't know the difference.
She didn't sleep at all, though she closed her eyes so the cameras wouldn't see, just in case anyone cared. When her alarm went off, she slipped out of the room with her bag, changing into the same clothes as she had worn the night before, thankful that they were at least comfortable to train in. The fitness center was quiet, but not empty. This was the time reserved for people who actually cared about winning, and Isabel, who didn't have a choice. Not that she minded. She had figured out at some point during her first year that her father hadn't enrolled her in any dance-related classes because they were all too elementary for her. She was the daughter of an icon and had been dancing with private tutors and choreographers since she was old enough to prove that it was a worthwhile investment. He enrolled her into dance classes in her second year, but didn't ease up on all the private training time. She dropped her bag by the door, plugged in her phone, and scrolled through for a playlist, deciding on something slow and calm, even though she felt the opposite. Once the first heavy, dragging song started to creep through the room, she pulled back the long curtains from the glass windows, allowing the natural morning light to spill in. She squinted, fighting off a headache as she slipped her sweatshirt over her head, dropping it beside her bag. In just her tights and a sports bra, she dragged a yoga mat into the middle of the room and started her stretches. She eased herself into her warm-up, increasing her heart rate and pushing the limits of her muscles until she felt looser, her breath deeper, more settled. She rolled up the mat, returning to the center of the room. She spun to face the mirror and started to move. Dancing was the easiest thing in the world for her. It was the only thing that didn't make her pause or stumble. It was the only thing she trusted, the only thing that gave her confidence. But at the same time, it wasn't an immediate thing. It was something she had to work for. It was a gradual act of self-soothing to make her steps lighter, to make her arm extend further, to have her chest rising and falling exactly in time with the beat. It was finesse and control and everything she lacked as soon as the music stopped and the rest of the world rushed back in. And in this moment, it was the only way to release the dark, endless feelings that built up inside her, swirling around an empty well that always seemed a few drops away from spilling over, and years away from ever being too full. She was a Sigma, a never-ending vessel for pain, sorrow, fear, and anger. But as much as she could take it away from other people, she couldn't ever seem to expunge it fully from herself. Eve had said she often looked sick, and Isabel would have to agree with her. She was often sick. weighed down by the little sips of suffering she stole, hoping to ease the frustrations of the very same people who chose to take their very same frustrations out on her. She was too pale, too weak, too addicted to pain. Until she danced. Then, suddenly, she was strong. She could extend herself instead of hunching inward to avoid being seen. She could let her steps make a sound. She could make her movements as angry, as frustrated as she felt inside. She barely even noticed when the hour was up, and she might have continued to dance if her music hadn't stopped playing, her timer interrupting the haunting melodies. She stumbled to a stop, like a ballerina doll at the end of a puppet show, limbs limp, lights out. Her brain was foggy and distracted as she padded over to her phone and switched off the alarm. So it took her several moments to catch sight of the two boys leaning up against the wall either side of the door. Gabriel Spade and Elijah Reed. She froze, and they all just stood there for a few seconds, staring at each other. Reed's light gray eyes were the exact same shape of coolly pissed off as they had been the previous morning when he used his alpha voice in the dining hall. Spade had his blonde hair combed impeccably into place, his coloring a few shades darker than Reed's. He had dark brown eyes that appeared a little reddish and an incredibly symmetrical face, which she imagined would probably please him, as everything else about his appearance was exact and symmetrical, too. He stood with his arms crossed, the barest frown on his lips.
"We did knock,"
Spade finally said, those reddish-brown eyes of his drifting over to the speakers before snapping back to her.
"You didn't hear."
She shifted nervously on her feet, glancing between them. The only thing she knew about the two alphas, she had learned from the Ironside website. They were best friends, and notoriously hard to get interesting footage of. They kept to themselves, skipped classes, and also happened to be dancers, like her. Which would explain why they were standing in one of the practice rooms, but not why they were standing inside her practice room. "How long have you been there?" she asked.
"Approximately 24 and a half minutes,"
Spade answered, without looking at his phone to check the time. Wasn't Reed supposed to be the genius?
"You're in our practice room,"
Reed supplied coldly. Isabel felt her face heating, panic tripping through her system.
"I'm so sorry."
She grabbed her bag, but dropped it and had to quickly snatch everything up again as the zipper was pulled open and a few of her books tumbled out.
"Shit, fuck, I'm sorry. I haven't slept. You don't care. Sorry."
She managed to get all her stuff together and hurried to the door as they both kicked off the wall in an eerily similar movement and began walking toward the bench and shelf where people could set their things down and hook up their phones. Elijah Reed slowed his pace as he neared the Sigma, examining her in the moment she passed them, just as he had the previous morning. She had seemed frazzled then, and she seemed frazzled now. There were deep, dark bruises under her eyes, and her long blonde hair, hanging in a thick rope over her shoulder, was tousled, with silky strands escaping everywhere. She would have looked like she had just rolled straight out of bed and into the practice room, if not for the light sheen of sweat on her pale skin and the choppy breath that was coming out of her mouth in little bursts. The girl was in bad shape. Not that it was his problem. He tore his eyes away, dumping his bag down on the bench as he shared a look with Gabriel. His friend seemed to be wondering the same thing as him. Why had they stood there and watched for so long? They could have spoken up earlier, but they didn't. They didn't even knock, like Gabriel claimed. They walked in, prepared to watch her scatter at the sight of two alphas, to apologize profusely and trip over herself in her haste to leave as soon as she realized she was in the wrong room, exactly as she was doing now. but she didn't even notice them. She just kept dancing, slow and hypnotizing and heartbreaking. Her face creased in pain, her hands often flinging up or reaching out, like she needed help, before retreating back to protect her body.
She was good. Really fucking good. Shockingly so.
Elijah was saying that in the look he shared with Gabriel, who lifted both brows in surprised agreement. Honestly, it was the first time they had been able to tear their eyes from her. It was purely an appreciation for her dance, though. Isabel Carter was damaged, with a capital D, and he didn't have time for that kind of drama. He noticed her sweatshirt on the bench and picked it up without thinking, calling out to her.
Carter!
She stopped, her arm frozen in its reach for the door. She took her time turning around, like she couldn't believe he knew her name. But when she saw the sweatshirt he was holding, her face flooded with color. Again.
Keep it!
She choked out, reddening further as she took in the expression on his face, obviously realizing he had no use for her sweatshirt, but she didn't want to come anywhere near them. She just gave a slight, embarrassed nod and hightailed it out of there, slamming the door behind her. Gabriel chuckled.
Where did all that gracefulness go?
Elijah hummed in his throat, tossing the sweatshirt back onto the bench. He should leave it there. They both just stood there, looking at it, until he finally picked it back up, passing it beneath his nose. There were rules amongst alphas. It wasn't polite to scent someone without their permission or knowledge. It was a very invasive thing to do without being in full view of the person, and it was not something he should have been doing in that moment. He sensed a strange mix of sweet and sour, like bitter cherries wrapped in glistening toffee, with the slightest tinge of two other scents that drifted apart from hers. One he was unfamiliar with, and it was too wispy for him, so he immediately moved on from it, narrowing in on the second. Amber.
Theo,
he growled, reaching for his phone. He tossed the sweatshirt in Gabriel's direction, who immediately lifted it to his nose as Elijah searched for Theodore's number. He answered on the fourth ring, and by that time, Gabriel had hooked up his phone to the speaker system and was playing music loud enough to drown out their conversation for the cameras. People often said that Elijah was a genius, but he was hard-pressed to see how Gabriel was any less intelligent than he was.
Did you forget something?
Theodore panted through his phone.
Because I'm out running. Call Mickey, he has nothing better to do. We decided last year you were going to stay away from the Carter girl,
Elijah snapped, turning the phone on speaker. They could practically hear his sneakers grinding to a halt on the pavement. Silence met the accusation.
Theo,
Gabriel sighed, his perfectly symmetrical face suddenly scrunching in a way that threw all the perfect lines and angles off. Gabriel hated when things didn't go according to plan.
No,
Theodore snapped, sensing something Gabriel had yet to say.
I like her. She's funny. Seems like a bucket of laughs,
Elijah stated dryly. Gabriel smirked.
Okay, fine, Theodore grumbled. She's having a tough time here. Not our problem,
Elijah interrupted.
She could really use a friend.
Theodore tried again, only to be interrupted by Gabriel.
You can't afford friends. When have I ever asked for anything?
Theodore demanded.
I agreed to the plan. I'm here. I do everything Kaylin demands, and I'm asking for one thing. And what if she overhears something?
Elijah growled out.
We aren't playing high school games here. Knowing anything puts all of us at risk, and her as well. If she makes even the slightest move to report us, Kaylin will dispatch Oscar. She'll be over. Do you understand? And if she finds out something and doesn't report us,
She's just as liable as us.
She helped me, Theodore whispered back. She could have walked away and left me there to slowly go insane. But she helped me. Helped us all, in case you've forgotten, because that night could have gone worse. And now she needs a friend. And I'm going to be that friend.
Gabriel was shaking his head, but he sounded resigned when he spoke.
Then you can hang out with her in Dorm A. If she really wants to be your friend, she won't mind. And that way, there will always be someone around to intervene. If I go feral.
Theodore's voice was so soft, but also hurt and a little sour.
It's for the best.
Elijah forced the anger and frustration from his voice, gentling it with understanding.
And for her safety. If it happens again, it might not be like last time. And I have the cameras in Dorm A rigged. If anything happens, we can just switch them off like last time. We don't have that control anywhere else.
Fine, Theodore grunted. I'll see what I can do.
He hung up, leaving Gabriel and Elijah to look at each other, silently sharing the concerned thoughts they didn't want to voice. Isabel didn't bother showering, since she had nothing to change into but her swimsuit. Luckily, it was still early enough that nobody batted an eye at her walking around in tights and a sports bra. They likely just assumed she had gone for a run. She dropped her bag inside the door to her room, crossing her arms to survey the mess.
Just in time, Miss Carter.
The voice behind her belonged to Professor Yarrow, who was brandishing a heavy frown and a roll of garbage bags.
I'm afraid we don't have any cleaning staff available, since individual rooms are the responsibility of the students inhabiting them.
She grimaced, looking around at the chaos before handing over the garbage bags.
But I've asked them to drop around some supplies during the day for you to use after your classes this afternoon. A locksmith will also be attending to fix the door. Is there anything else you'll be needing?
Isabel knew better than to ask if any action would be taken against the girls, and in all honesty, she didn't think she could bear to hear the answer right at that moment, so instead, she said, I don't have any clothes.
No clothes?
Yarrow repeated, eyeing her sports bra.
Well, of all the things...
She frowned.
As you know, Market Street only becomes available in your third year, so there's nowhere to buy clothes on campus. Might that be something you can sort out with your parents? Most first and second year students have new clothing brought in by their family.
My parents haven't attended any of the family visits since I started here. Yarrow tipped down her glasses, her frown softening somewhat as she peered at Isabel's face.
Do you have any way of contacting them?
Isabel's hand shot into her pocket immediately, wrapping protectively around her phone. She didn't want to admit to the constant, unanswered saga of messages she had sent her mother.
I haven't succeeded, was all she said.
Very well.
Yarrow pushed her glasses back up.
I'll contact them today and sort something out. The next family visit is this weekend, so you'll have to borrow some clothes from a friend until then.
Thank you for your help.
That's what she was supposed to say. It was what her father would have wanted her to say.
So why did the words stick in her throat? Why did she swallow them down, watching silently as Yarrow left? She picked up her bag again and closed the door, returning to Eve's room, where she found a message written on the notice board.
Door is always open for my brand new bestie, Isabel Carter.
She shook her head. The girl was downright crazy. Did she want to be ostracized by all her friends? Isabel tried the handle and found the door unlocked. There was another note on the bed on the floor, which she had carefully made that morning before slipping out. It was Eve's phone number and another message beneath.
Good morning, early riser. Did you sleep at all? Help yourself to any clothes, as long as you promise never to return the underwear. Meet me in the hall for breakfast. I'll save you a seat. P.S. I foresaw you being too uncomfortable to just go through someone's closet and try on their clothes, so I already picked them out for you. They're on my bed.
Isabel laughed, reading the note.
It felt nice, having the attention of a happy and bubbly girl like Eve. It was like she suddenly belonged somewhere.
She wasn't just the Sigma anymore.
She was Eve's friend.
There was yet another sticky note on the folded pile of clothing, and she picked it off.
Show up. Be fierce. Don't let them know they hurt you.
She wasn't planning on hiding away, but she also wasn't exactly planning on being fierce. The note seemed to be referring to the outfit more than anything else. Black high-top boots, high-waisted army pants with random pockets and hanging straps, a loose, off-the-shoulder shirt cut off at the waist. It definitely wasn't her usual style, but in a weird sort of way, she understood what Eve was trying to do. It was a storyline she had seen play out on the Ironside show many times over. The underdog cliché.
At some point, they always got a makeover. Some sort of revenge outfit. Though they were usually third years by that stage, with access to the glow-up bar and Market Street to get fully made over for their big entrance.
Nobody cared about Isabel's revenge outfit or her underdog entrance. Nobody except Eve, who was silently cheering her on, even though she wasn't in the race. And that was why Isabel grabbed the clothes and took them to the bathroom to shower and get dressed for the day.
Chapter 5. Angels and Demons. Her first class for the day was fortune-telling and the mystic arts, and it wasn't until she sank into her seat, cushioning her heavy head onto her folded arms, that the words written on her wall floated back to her. Stay in your lane. Ashford had said those exact words during his tarot reading. With anyone else, it would have been a coincidence, but she couldn't help but stew over his words as exhaustion tugged at her, threatening to send her under. At some point, the class must have started, because a desk bumped against hers, jolting her upright. A surprised sound squeaked from her throat. Ashford was sitting across from her again, his mouth pressed flat, his arms loosely crossed over his chest, his hips low in the chair as he kicked out his long legs. Thankfully, he had set his chair far enough back that his shoes didn't touch hers.
Ashford? She croaked, glancing around the rest of the room. This time, the other students weren't paying them any attention. They were paired off in twos, heads bent together, talking and laughing quietly. She glanced to the clock, her frown deepening. They were halfway through the lesson already.
Good morning.
Ashford unwound one of his arms to inspect his fingernails.
Nice of you to join us. Vega decided to make yesterday's pairings permanent for the rest of the year.
She dragged her eyes back to the table, taking in the tarot deck. She reached for it, her fingers shaking, and he suddenly dipped forward, his hand catching her wrist. He held her hand up before his face, his aquamarine eyes hyper-focused. She found herself distracted by his own hand for a moment, peering at the feather-thin tattoos decorating his golden fingers before she quickly pulled her hand away.
You're shaking.
He tipped his head to the side, recrossing his arms.
Long night?
Don't you already know? She suddenly snapped, surprised by the acid in her own tone. He blinked and leaned forward again, his pink lips parting.
Oh.
The sound barely escaped him. It was more of a sigh.
Something happened to you, and it reminded you of what I said. I get it. It happens. You understand that doesn't make me responsible, right?
She did, but she wished she didn't. She just wanted to blame someone. The fourth-year girls would have been preferable, but Ashford had predicted it in some way, and he was the one sitting in front of her right at that moment.
Still, she sighed,
He's right.
She reached for the deck of cards again, her shuffling unsteady.
What happened?
He asked casually.
You're a little shaken up, but you don't seem hurt.
Hurt? She dropped half the deck, watching as the cards scattered over the desk.
Did you see me getting hurt?
She asked, gathering the cards back up again. He tucked his dirty blonde hair behind his ears, his chest swelling with a breath.
If we're going to keep answering questions with questions, we might as well not talk at all.
Ashford had a stubborn streak. She could see it in the set of his eyes, in the way his lips pressed together and firmed. He had a little dimple close to the side of his mouth that appeared only when he was hardening his lips the way he was now.
Nothing happened.
She broke first, but she broke with a lie. That dimple deepened as he corrected his posture, dragging his chair forward and stretching his legs out again. She could feel the heat of his long limbs either side of her ankles, his shoes knocking against the legs of her chair.
Why bother lying?
He asked conversationally.
I'll find out when whatever it is airs.
She stumbled over a surprised laugh. You think the show is going to air my day-to-day existence? She asked.
It can't have been that bad then.
He shrugged. The statement had her bristling, and she angrily slapped the deck down onto the table, pulling a card at random.
Or it wasn't on camera, she ground out.
She didn't want to confide in him, but it rankled that he was dismissing something that was still pecking slowly away at her, like a loose thread she had yet to tidy up. It had created a wound, and she didn't like the way it was festering. Ashford plucked the card out of her hand, rolling his eyes and tossing it back to the desk without looking at it.
You're terrible at this. Try again.
She picked another card and had only slid it out a few inches before he was snatching it off her.
No, he tossed it. Again.
This happened several more times until one of them finally made him pause. This one he actually turned over. He looked from her face to the card and back to her face, his unhappy dimple appearing again. It was the deepest she had ever seen it, even on the Ironside show. He laid the card down on the desk, face down, his fingers tapping against it. Can I see it? She prompted, when it seemed like he was just going to sit there, so deep in his own thoughts that she momentarily ceased to exist. His attention shot back to her, and he hesitated before flipping the card. She watched as his entire demeanor changed, a slow smile spreading over his face. It seemed oddly forced, but she wasn't sure how she knew that exactly. She didn't know him. She turned her attention to the card instead. The lovers. It seemed innocent enough. It certainly didn't seem to predict any sort of doom or death or anything else that should have had him frowning so hard.
Hardly news, is it?
He winked at her, releasing a low chuckle, his blue eyes sparkling, his teeth flashing. No, I suppose it isn't, she said mildly, gathering the cards and handing them over to him. You're always with girls. He tutted, pushing the cards back to the center of the desk.
One reading a day. You heard Vega. After the first, the powers of divination aren't nearly as accurate.
Did you draw my card while I was sleeping? She asked, glancing at the desk.
No.
He leveled her with a look, that smile and sparkle melting right away. Then...
We've done each other already.
He cut her off, but not harshly.
Now, tell me what happened last night. You're bruised.
His hand shot out, suddenly cupping her face, his thumb stroking beneath her eye.
All purple and black. This is more than a sleepless night.
His hand snapped back to his lap just as quickly, making the side of her face prickle with strange heat. People don't like it when sigmas are friends with alphas. She used those words deliberately and watched as he mulled them over, not a single tick in his impassive expression. It wasn't quite a response, more like an acknowledgement. He didn't ask which Alpha she was talking about, which meant he already knew. "You told me to stay in my lane." She chewed on the inside of her cheek, waiting to see if he would react to her words. He only nodded slightly, his eyes flitting over her features. He didn't usually sit so still, holding his attention in place for so long. It was beginning to unnerve her. Was that a reading or a warning? He pulled in air through his teeth, his shoes knocking against the legs of her chair again, jostling her just slightly.
"All of my readings are warnings."
He wasn't exactly being rude, but she was beginning to feel the thump of his annoyance against her chest again, though it was now tinged with something else. Something like panic. It didn't make any sense. She was tempted to open herself to it, to taste it, to see if it might tell her the secrets he was keeping so close to his chest. But Ashford didn't seem like the type to take that sort of intrusion lightly. Of all the Alphas she had met at Ironside, he seemed the most like her father, though he was still worlds apart. Even so, those few qualities they had in common made her extra wary of him. She wondered at his secrecy, his pride, his short, cryptic answers, and she wondered how he might find ways to harm her.
"Ignore that," he said,
a second before her phone vibrated. She had reached for it out of instinct, but she paused, her hand halfway to her pocket. "Why?"
"Because,"
he regarded her coolly,
"as you just said, sigmas shouldn't be friends with alphas."
"That's not what I said."
"Now, mates, on the other hand," he continued, "sigmas can most definitely mate with alphas. In fact, it's widely regarded as the most fortunate pairing, as you must well know, your parents being who they are."
He must have said that a little too loudly, because several people turned to peek at him. You didn't simply toss the word mate around in a casual fashion at Ironside. It was equivalent to mentioning explosions in an airport. Even if the conversation was innocent, everyone's hair still stood on end, and a target popped up over the speaker's head. "Observe carefully. Possible love terrorist." She slumped back in her chair, too exhausted to put her usual walls up and keep her expression neutral. "I disagree," she said flatly. His dark gold brow quirked, and she wanted to say more, to just let it all out, to tell the whole world about her mother's quiet, invisible pain and her father's quiet, invisible wrath. She wanted to speak the dark thoughts swirling inside her like she had done last night with Theodore, but she didn't dare. She sat back. She deflated. She pressed her lips together and turned her eyes from Ashford, disengaging from the conversation.
"I see,"
was all he said, and the thumping against her chest shifted, leaking through a small taste of pain. "Do you know who your mate is?" She blurted the thought as soon as it popped into her head, and several more students turned to watch them. "Have you, you know?" She tapped on the side of her head. His lips twitched.
"I don't see flashes of the future. Nothing so concrete."
"Do you have any straight answers inside you?" It was the first genuine smile she thought she had seen on his face, and the little dimple was back, almost disappearing into the creases either side of his mouth.
"Tell you what."
His shoes bumped her chair again.
"You unlock your phone and put it on the desk here."
He tapped the surface before him.
"And I'll give you a straight answer."
Thinking it had something to do with not wanting to be overheard, she did his bidding, unlocking her phone and sliding it over the desk to him. He picked it up, tapping something out against the screen, and then slid it back. "I'll text you," he said, as Vegas signaled the end of the class. He got up without another word, leaving her behind to frown at her phone. The message from Theodore was still there, on her lock screen, and she picked it up to tap on it. "Theodore, can we move our lessons to the lake?" Just as she started to wonder why the hell he would suggest such a thing, several more messages came through. "Theodore."
"Not the main lake. I meant Alpha Lake."
"Theodore."
"It's heated, like a swimming pool, and the water's really nice."
She quickly gathered up her things, not wanting to be late to dance acrobatics, and tried to text him back as she navigated the corridors.
"Isabel, what's wrong with the pool?"
"Theodore, I really want to be your friend, but people might start talking."
She halted so fast, someone almost smacked into her from behind. They let out a disgruntled murmur, sidestepping her and hurrying away as she stared at her phone, trying not to feel the pang of hurt.
"Theodore, I don't want people thinking we're trying to force a mate bond. They might come after you."
She started walking again, chewing on her lip.
"Isabel, I hadn't thought of that."
It was common for couples who wanted to be mates to spend a lot of time together to try to force a bond, and sigmas and alphas were generally considered to be a well-matched pair, since the less important sigma could emotionally support the all-important alpha in a way no other could. They were also the rarest ranks, making them more even in numbers. If people thought that they were trying to force a bond, not only would it increase the attacks against her, it would bring unwanted attention by the government and the Ironside officials. Nobody tried to force a bond unless they were planning on almost killing themselves, since the near death of one of the partners was the only time a bond would actually begin to form. Those sorts of rumors brought a lot of scrutiny, and she wasn't equipped for that kind of attention.
"Theodore,
I'm not trying to lure you to my dorm."
"Isabel,
yes, you are."
"Theodore."
"Okay, I am."
"Theodore."
"But my intentions are pure as the water in Alpha Lake, entirely athletically motivated. Plus, your swimsuit helps."
"Theodore."
"Forget I said that. So, tonight?"
"Isabel, I have to clean my room." "Theodore."
"That's the worst excuse I've ever heard. Am I that hopeless of a student? I have the soul of a dolphin. You just need to give me a chance."
"Isabel."
"It's not an excuse. Someone trashed my room last night." His response didn't come immediately, and she kept checking her phone as she arrived to the dance hall and began stretching, nervously looking at her phone every chance she got. When Professor Lai entered the hall and called for everyone's attention, she tucked her phone back into her bag with a sigh. Dance acrobatics was by far her most difficult class and the most taxing on her body, outside of her private practices. Luckily, they had a morning tea service in the dining hall after the second period, so she might be able to sneak a quick nap somewhere before attempting to tackle the rest of her day.
"Good morning, everyone!"
Lai moved to the mirror at the front of the hall, an excited bounce to his step, his lilting voice carrying impressively across the vast space.
"Since we've mostly covered the basics, we're now going to pair up and tackle some acrobatic duo work. Gender and size mean nothing to me. Pick someone you have chemistry with, and the rest will work itself out. I reserve the right to switch out the pairs if I think something isn't working. This is a serious class. You aren't just here to look good. You're here to hone your skills. So if you have any complaints about the pairings I change, you're welcome to take it up with the beginner's dance professor, who you'll be finishing out the rest of your year with."
Immediately, people started pairing up, like they'd known this was coming.
She supposed it was happening in a lot of their classes by now, after 4 months of being taught the basics for whatever module they'd chosen. She resigned herself to waiting in the back until the last person needed a partner, but it was equally humiliating when she realized there were an odd number of people in the class, and she was now the only one standing by herself. As soon as Lai noticed, he frowned. He was a no-nonsense sort of person, and didn't care for the rank politics that plagued the students.
"Is anyone willing to take on a third?"
he asked. His frown deepened when everyone avoided looking at him, and he hurriedly motioned her over to his side.
"You can partner with me for now, Carter."
"Great." Still, Lai was better than one of the Omega girls who was glaring at her from across the room, or the Beta smirking cruelly at her, probably counting down the minutes until he could relay her humiliation to Bellamy. The lesson was particularly grueling, since Lai decided to use Isabel to demonstrate all the positions for the other students. They laughed every time she messed up, and Lai's ire turned from them to Isabel. She wasn't usually this clumsy, but she also wasn't used to so much attention on her, and she was bone tired, her limbs imbued with a tremble she couldn't contain. He pulled her aside at the end of the class, lightly clasping her elbow.
"I know you can do better than that, Carter."
He released her, his expression displeased.
"Whatever you've got going on, you need to learn to leave it at the door. Acrobatic work, especially partner work, can be very dangerous if you aren't focused."
"I understand," she said. "I'll do better next time."
"Make sure you do. Practice your balance before next lesson."
He walked off, dismissing her. She didn't even check her phone when she reached the bench where she had left her belongings. She simply grabbed her bag and stumbled to the library, finding solace in her lonely cubicle on the top floor, where she laid her head on her hands and sank into a fretful sleep. She awoke to her alarm exactly 25 minutes later and dragged the phone under her face, mashing the screen to turn it off. She found herself staring at a message from Theodore, and she sat up straight to reply.
"Theodore, I'll help you."
"Isabel,
you can't come to dorm O and just walk into my room. See reasons above."
"Theodore,
I know. I called in a favor. It's my fault your room got trashed."
"Isabel, no, it's not." "Theodore,
now you have to apologize."
For a second, she didn't understand what he meant, until his words the night before came back to her.
"You don't apologize to me unless you've lied to me, okay?"
She chuckled, shaking her head. "Isabel,
I guess I'm sorry."
"Theodore,
I guess you're forgiven. See you later, Illy."
She hauled her bag over her shoulder and pushed herself through the rest of her classes, giving everything she had left to her dance practice in the afternoon. By the end of the day, she had sweated through 3 dance classes and 2 hours of practice in the clothes Eve had lent her, and she couldn't bear to wear them for a second longer. She stopped by Eve's room on the way to the showers, thankful to find the other girl inside. Since they didn't share any classes, she hadn't seen her since breakfast.
"There you are!"
Eve tossed her arm around Isabel's shoulder, but then immediately retreated.
"Oh my God, you're so sweaty!"
She backed off, grabbing a tote from her bed.
"Here, I put together some essentials. Workout clothes, a pair of jeans, another top. I'm sorry I couldn't spare more, but I don't have much myself. You can keep the pajamas I gave you yesterday."
"It's just until this weekend," Isabel assured her gratefully. "Yarrow is organizing my parents to bring clothes to the family visit. I'll wash everything then and bring it back to you."
"No rush."
Eve smiled, forcing the tote into her hands.
"I need to shower too. Then we can head to dinner?"
Isabel held her tongue as they made their way into the bathroom. Having lunch with Eve that day had been awkward at best. Eve carried on being her usual, sociable, bubbly self, but all the other girls sitting at the table couldn't seem to wrap their heads around the fact that she had invited Isabel to sit with them. They ended up talking around the two girls, almost pretending they didn't exist. Eve tried to hide it, but it clearly bothered her. Still, Isabel couldn't refuse the invitation, not after everything Eve had done for her. She tucked herself into a shower stall and extracted one of the amenity packs she had swiped from the fitness center that afternoon. It contained a small, fold-up plastic hairbrush and hair tie, a mini toothbrush and toothpaste set, mini bottles of shampoo, conditioner, body wash and body lotion, and even small cleansing serums and moisturizer packets for the face. She usually languished in her showers, since even the bathrooms in Dorm O were luxurious. Each shower stall was the size of a small room, with marble floors and ceilings, and small teardrop chandeliers. There was a changing area with fluffy robes hanging up that were refreshed by the attendants that slipped in and out of the stalls between uses to clean and prepare them for the next person. This time, however, she hurried. She was nervous about making Eve wait. She extracted a pair of jeans and another crop top from the bag, slipping on her only pair of shoes remaining intact. The clothes were exactly the style she usually wore, and she wondered if Eve had noticed. She dropped her stuff off in her room, noticing the fresh lock and the key waiting for her on the other side of the door. The mess inside hadn't been touched. "Ready?" Eve asked, her face shining, makeup-free, and her hair pulled up on top of her head. She looked comfortable, happy. Not at all like she was worried her friends were about to ostracize her. Isabel began to follow her out, but paused, glancing down at an envelope beneath her sneakers. She picked it up, reading her name across the front. She tucked it beneath her arm as she locked up the door, flipping it over as she followed Eve out. Some of the other girls had caught up to Eve and chatted with her on their way out of the dorm, leaving Isabel a few steps behind. The letter wasn't stamped and didn't have a return address. "Fan mail?" one of the Omega girls asked, whispering low as she passed Isabel. "For you?" She laughed, skipping ahead, her words trailing behind. "Must be a weirdo." Isabel tore open the envelope, unfolding the letter within. It was typed. "Within these walls, there are true gifted, and those who simply have the blood. You have the blood, but do you have the guts?" She slipped the letter into her bag, hating that the Omega girl had been right. She had no reason to expect her mother would have written to her, so she gathered up the pervasive disappointment and shoved it down hard. The letter wasn't even stamped, which meant it had been slipped into the dorm's letterbox by another student. She had allowed herself to slip too far behind the group of Omega girls and found herself pushed to the end of the table where Eve took her seat, several of the other girls scrambling to sit around her, turning their backs on Isabel. Eve frowned over at her, but Isabel quickly stood to get her food, tossing the concerned girl a reassuring smile. As soon as she got up, someone slid into her seat, blocking her from the table completely. She sighed, pulling out her phone to send Eve a quick message as she approached the food bar. "Isabel, I'm going to take some food back to my room and get started on cleaning up. I have a friend helping, so just enjoy your night." The theme of the food bar today seemed to have something to do with bread, since there was almost every type imaginable on display. Different loaves, rolls, and slices from all cultures of the world, with samples of dishes to go along with each kind. There was bolognese to complement the Vienna loaves, Greek staples surrounding knots of sesame-crusted bread, and savory rolls that looked to have been baked with pieces of cheese in baskets between samples of Brazilian stews. She grabbed a takeaway container, putting a couple of salted pretzels into it since they were accompanied by little containers of different dips, all with lids and easy to take with her. She also snatched up a bottle of mineral water and a sweet scone before slipping out of the hall and returning to her room. She unlocked the door, pushing inside and settling against one of the walls, opening her laptop to play the latest episode of Ironside as she ate her dinner. She had only just finished when the door opened and closed, completely at random. She jumped to her feet and then scrambled back against the wall as Theodore and another boy materialized before the closed door. Killian Gray, the alpha with the power of invisibility. Theodore took a step toward her, but then stopped, his stormy eyes taking in the destruction of her room. She faltered, staring at Gray. I was just about to start cleaning. Hello. He gave her a half smile, his lush lips curving. You don't mind if I help, do you? You don't need to. She shot a panicked look to Theodore, but he was standing still, staring at the mess. As soon as she got over the shock of seeing Gray inside her room, she felt Theodore's emotion, heavy and dark, tapping against her chest. He was eerily still, reminding her of the way he had stared at the scratches on her arm. He was staring at her ruined belongings like they were his, like someone had personally offended him. Gray's pale, beautiful eyes shot to him, that half-smile disappearing. Theo, he snapped, his silky tone transforming into a whip. Theodore straightened, his shoulders tense as he spun around, his teeth gritted. Who did this? Gray didn't wait for her answer to either of their questions. He walked forward, frowning at the torn album covers and flicking his eyes up to the wall where they had been hanging, though he couldn't have known that. I don't know, Isabel shrugged. Some of the Omegas. It doesn't matter. You don't have cameras in here, Gray argued, though he didn't even look up at the walls to check. Of course it matters. They'll just come back. He pulled his phone out, tapping something out against the screen. He was just too beautiful. Him being inside her room was just too weird. She shot another look at Theodore, but this time he caught it. He looked amused, and he just barely shook his head. Whatever that was supposed to mean. Problem fixed, Gray announced. I'll be back. Just need to meet Elijah outside for something. Elijah Reed? She asked, once Gray had turned invisible, slipping out of the room. Here? Outside dorm O? She moved to the window, but it wasn't facing the front of the dorm. Theodore chuckled, navigating the debris on the floor to shift behind her. The warmth of his body skittered across her spine. You know I'm an alpha too, right? She spun around, her face warming. I agreed to be friends with you. I didn't agree to be friends with half the alphas at Ironside. Killian is probably a safer friend than I am. His eyes dropped from her face to the window. All anyone talks about is how much of a gay icon he is and how he's completely disinterested in everyone. They won't suspect you two of trying to force a bond. She allowed her attention to crawl over his face while he was still looking out the window, taking in the tense way he was holding himself and the hints of darkness creeping around the edges of his pupil, despite the ease in the set of his lips. It wasn't like the darkness of his ferality, but more like a shadow from the top of the window. Still, she couldn't help but be reminded of that black-eyed look again. His hair fell forward over his forehead as usual, almost obscuring one of his eyes, and she fought against the insane urge to brush the dark strands back, away from the faint gold tinge of his skin. Is he? She asked, fighting to stay still when his eyes suddenly snapped back to hers. Gay, I mean.
Might be,
he shrugged, and she felt his emotion brush up against her, so faint she couldn't tell what he was feeling.
Does it matter?
For the first time, he sounded mildly defensive. Of course not. The easy set to his mouth softened further, his perfect smile flashing.
Good. Let's get started.
At first, it was a little awkward. But then Theodore set his phone against the shelf in her room, an easy, upbeat song piercing through the heavy, silent space and dissipating the tension. She tried to shake off her unease at the alpha sorting through her private, ruined possessions, but he never lingered on anything unless it was to hold it up to her. When he did that, she directed him to the keep pile or the trash pile. They had been at it for almost half an hour before Gray returned, and she was beginning to realize that